On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down again with Michael Ballin for a capital markets update.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them, with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps for you to grow your passive income and become job optional. During this episode, we're going to get a capital markets update. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Now, before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make a request that at any point, if you like what you hear, give us a thumbs up and be sure to subscribe to the show. Never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Today, we've got the privilege to learn from a person with multiple decades experience in the capital markets. I would describe today's Maverick as someone who's passionate about helping sponsors, somebody like me, get the best loan terms that exist so that every investor in that deal can benefit. And also helping banks who have notes that are in default quickly and quietly liquidate those. Today's Maverick, Michael Ballin, is back on the show with us. Michael, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. It's good to have you back here. Say, for the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
I'm Michael Ballin. I'm originally from New York. Started my career in banking. I've done just about every kind of financing. Ended up in commercial real estate, and I am a mortgage banker. The difference between a mortgage broker and a mortgage banker is that I represent life insurance companies making real estate loans while using their funds. So I'm a lender. I originate, underwrite, close, and service commercial real estate loans for life insurance companies.
Well, you do some other things in the note world too.
Correct. I wasn't sure I was supposed to segue into that. So I also had founded about 2 years ago a note sale business. And what we do is we brought some efficiency to helping banks, life companies, credit unions, debt funds, and private lenders selling very quickly, very discreetly, and very efficiently their non-performing loans.
They're non-performing loans. And so the reason I want to have you back on, for the audience's sake, you can get used to Michael because I'm going to ask him to come back on. I think you've got a front row seat to two sides of the coin, if you will. One being exactly what's taking place in new transactions, meaning new deal flow getting put together, the financing side of that equation. And then the other side of the coin is things going out the back door when they don't work out.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily my loans being worked out.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, not necessarily. In fact, probably most of what you do, or if not almost all of what you do, is moving somebody else's note that's not working out, not things you originate. Fair to say?
Yes. Yes. As far as I know, in my career of over 30 years, I only know of one loan that's been in default.
Yeah.
Repossessed.
Sure. Sure. Well, let's talk about both sides of the coin. Let's talk about the origination of loans. I just want maybe from not so much in the nitty gritty from how you originate or that, but what are you seeing from a macro standpoint, transactions that are taking place, sentiment in the marketplace? And then I want to transition to the note side because I think that's going to be a fun conversation for us.
Absolutely. Yeah. On the origination side for loans, there obviously transactional volume is off. You can see it in the papers. All the big brokerage companies are saying they're off 70, 80, 90%. So there's fewer and fewer sale transactions going on. So a lot of what we're doing is refinancing. There's a lot of borrowers looking for what we call positive leverage. So a loan that's rate is lower than your cap rate. And it's not easy to do because most lenders' cost of funds, I guess their ultimate coupon, are pushing sevens and eights. It's been a very long time since we've had rates that high. And most of these deals have very low cap rates, 4%, 5%, 6%. So there's a lot of people searching for better, cheaper capital. And we've got very cheap capital, but it's, and oftentimes it's not that cheap. Also, that what people are looking for are flexible prepayments so that if rates do go down, if they lock in a rate for 5 years, they want the ability to be able to refinance at a lower rate if rates do come down, which I do not believe they will be coming down anytime soon. My gut tells me that rates will continue to go up this year and next year and flatten out and maybe come back to where they are now, but I don't believe they're going back to 3% and 3.5%.
We're recording this at the end of August 2023. I recall back to the beginning of the year, rates obviously were going up. The Wall Street was betting on a rate reduction in 2023. Because I sit here today, Jerome Powell just came out and today indicated that inflation is still too high. In the Fed's opinion, inflation is still too high, although it has continued to fall. Inflation is still too high, thus laying the groundwork for what will be in another increase to rates. And thus, Wall Street has it pushed out to sometime in Q3 or Q4 of 2024 before rates fall. But in my opinion, they may place the bet. Nobody has any idea. And based on what the Fed is signaling, rates are going higher.
Yeah, I would focus less on what the Fed says. And obviously, you have to focus on that. But I would focus on what the bond investors and traders say. And what I heard today was they expect Fed funds to be 6% very soon.
Bet today is, on the backside of his comments, the 5 years trading up. My point to the 5 year, largely on, in my world, you're borrowing money from a regional or local bank. They're pegging off the 5 year, seems to be their piece. And I know in the insurance world, they've got a different measure, not so much the 5 year focus.
Correct. And we're looking at the 5 year because if you want to manage a prepayment penalty, you want to limit the number of yield or number of years that you're calculating yield maintenance. So if you take a 5 year deal and you're 2 or 3 years into it and rates go down, your prepayment penalty will be lower if you have less duration left, less remaining loan term left. So you take a 10 year deal in year three, your prepayment penalty will be much worse than it will be in year five. The fly in the ointment is that the 5 year treasury is about 25 or 30 basis points higher than the 10 year. The yield curve is inverted. So the 5 year rates are higher than the 10 year rates. So it's very complicated right now to kind of find the right mix of prepayment penalty and term. So the 7 year is getting a bit more attention than it normally does. 7 year fixed rates.
What you see that the transactions taking place out in the marketplace, are you seeing the buyers, the sponsors? Is there a heavy focus on the fact or their belief that rates will come down and they want to set themselves up for a period in a, call it a 24 to 48 month window for that ability to capitalize and refinance?
What do you mean?
Are you seeing a lot of that inside their business plan when they're locking in rates? Or are you seeing more people extending out 7 to 10 years to try to lock in something just in case the total uncertainty happens?
No, the majority of the people don't want to lock in long-term at today's rates. They look at, and again, our coupons are much lower than banks' coupons. So we're looking at 5.75%, 6%, 6.125%, sometimes 5.5%. And they're saying, look, I don't want to take a 10-year deal for that. I'll be stuck for 8 years or 10 years. I just don't want to do it. So they're looking for that shorter duration.
Overall, what do you think the biggest exposure and the risk exposure is to people in the overall marketplace? I guess what I'm asking is, where do you think the economy is headed with everything that is taking place on the interest rate side and the transaction volume that you see actually taking place right now?
Well, it's coincidental. I'm not saying this to drive business on the note sales side, but I do believe we're headed for some sort of big correction, both in the stock market and in the real estate market. I don't think that investors are taking all the data points into consideration because once the banks start taking back property, let's just say the banks start taking back properties and selling them, those become comps. When investors who have a lot of equity built up in their properties decide that we're not waiting for the last dollar and we'll take what the market will give us, even though it's less than it was last year, those also become comps. The banks that I know of are using much higher debt service coverage ratios. Example, one bank I know of is using a 115 out of 125 debt service coverage ratio and a much higher, like an 8% exit rate. So they're cutting proceeds. So when you get to your refinance, if you want to wait until the end of your remaining term, you may end up with a cash in refinance. Mm-hmm. That puts you straight in the crosshairs of, what do I do? Do I sell at a lower number? Do I refinance at a higher rate? And do I put cash in? I think now is the time to sell.
I think I know your answer, but I want to pose the question anyway. That what you just outlined was prefaced on banks taking a property back. Why are banks going to take properties back?
Well, there's only so much that the regulators will allow them to ignore. And right now, their assumption is that a property that has very strong cash flow and a property that has moderate cash flow or low cash flow is worth the same amount. And it's not. A buyer wouldn't look at it that way. And when the regulators come in and start saying, you know, look, you're not categorizing these loans properly, you should be focusing, put them on a watch list, and you should be reserving for it, which is a very unprofitable proposition. Mm-hmm. I think at that point, they'll become more serious and start selling notes, start taking back properties, looking at technical defaults more seriously, not extending these 3 and 6 month extensions to help people kind of get a refinance or a sale done, which isn't happening. It's happening plenty, but for individuals, the ones that aren't really seriously looking, they're just depending on another extension. Those people, I think they're going to have to treat differently. Up until now, the regulators have not put a lot of pressure on them because there was COVID and there was recovery from COVID and yep. There's political reasons why they do that. But at some point, the whole thing becomes just too much to bear. And the banks, in order to stay solvent, have to be more serious about it.
When I think about what's coming, I think about essentially a python eating a pig. You got this enormous thing working its way through the system. And what I mean by that is things are going along just smoothly. And then all of a sudden, interest rates practically double in a very short time period. And what you have is a bunch of loans, all the debt coming mature year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And they're coming off their threes and fours, and they're going to be staring down the pipeline at six, sevens, and eights.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could hang on and end up back at 3.5. That's what I think the hope is, but I don't see it happening. I mean, I got to be careful because people say that I'm being negative because of my note sale business, but I don't think it's negative. I think it's part of the cycle that we used to have. I think that most of the people are going to be fine. Have to make concessions. They may have to put money into their loans or right-size their loans. They may take modifications or refinances at much higher rates and make less money in their pocket. I think right now it's an event that is impacting equity more than it's impacting the debt.
Yeah.
But I think if you really want to live in the present time, not the past, you have to get comfortable with a lower yield. Your internal rate of return can be lower. And if it was 25 and now it's 18 or 15, that's great. If it was 12 and now it's 4, sell.
We were somewhere with interest rates being somewhere around 3.5%. I'm going off memory. I'm going to say, I'll ask a question, then I'll give you a statement. Mm-hmm. When was the last time rates flirted with roughly 3.5 on a commercial loan prior to 24 months ago?
Well, that's the part that we don't understand. My colleagues, what we personally believe is that if you're wishing for a 1% treasury, you're wishing for one of three things: the Great Depression, the Great Recession, or some other cataclysmic event that the government has to step in
and
stimulate. So what comes along with that, which is that people would want that, is that yes, your interest rate will go back, but what else comes with that? Vacancy and businesses go bankruptcies and all the other bad things that come along with.
Yeah, no, that's exactly where I was going. That's how many years it's been. You're going back to literally global and significant events inside this country to actually live in an environment where that actually occurred.
Yeah, I don't wish for.
No, then certainly you don't wish for. And prior to this cycle, it had been a heck of a long time before we actually saw those kind of numbers.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because people see it in their everyday life. They see how much gas costs and food costs, and everywhere you go, everything costs more. And you wonder how your tenants, whether it be retail or office or apartments, how they are making their rent payments. And it's getting harder and harder. Yet when you watch the news, they tell you that, you know, we're going to have a soft landing, which I think statistics on that is that of 11 attempts, the Fed has done it twice. And it just doesn't feel like there's a soft landing out there. I'm sorry. I don't want to be negative because I think most people have the ability to withstand a downturn. But the other people are only going to get caught off guard because they're not planning properly, not because they don't know what to do.
What I hear from some is, yes, the yield curve's inverted, but you don't need to worry about that.
Be different this time.
It's going to be different this time, although it's correctly, I think, 11 out of 12, the last 12 recessions were preceded by an inverted yield curve. Only once did the yield curve invert, in which we did not go into a recession. But somehow this time's going to be different.
Yeah, and listen, it's not a political statement to say that government spending is out of control. They overstimulated in the last stimulus after the last recession, the Great Recession. It's politically favorable to waste a lot of money and buy votes and spend money. Both parties do it. And now we got the bill.
Yeah.
It's not a political statement. It's just the reality. So some people want to sit and argue about it, listen to the media, hope for the best. And other people want to move on and get used to it and move ahead. And that's really what happened. I'm sorry, I got caught in the middle of a statement, but that's really what happened was the last two downturns, I didn't want to get into the business of helping distressed borrowers because that's not what I do.
Yep.
And then this downturn, I was looking for a hedge. What am I going to do during a downturn where there's half as much business and that business is very competitive because there's still too many people chasing the business. So you make even less money potentially. So I have to have something else if we're going to have a massive downturn. So that's how the note sale business was born.
Well, let's talk about the note sale business for the audience's sake. And then you, the passive listener, I'm going to put a bow on this at the end. We're going to talk about what this means to you, how to actually move forward with this conjecture to go, what actions do we actually take? And so talk about the note business. What is it? And then why do lenders take the action they do on the note side?
Well, that's a very big question, and there's a lot of nuance to the answer, but essentially regulators or regulations keep a bank from doing the many different things that a private investor can do when it comes to working out a loan. So it takes a lot longer, it's a lot more expensive of a proposition, and it's not something that a lender is good at. When a lender takes back a property and markets it through a broker, and the broker says that this is bank owned, I think the statistics have got to be terrible. And I think that the bank owned property probably yields less of a purchase price.
There's a haircut when the broker conveys
that's
that
the
statement.
Expectation. Correct. So the banks know it. They don't do it well. They don't want to take on the management of a property. They don't want to take on the additional expense of paying the taxes and paying the insurance and leasing and management and all that fun stuff. It's just not their business. So knowing that that's what's coming, it's more profitable for them. It's better. Their time is better spent on working out a deal to see if they can put it back together. And if they can't put it back together, selling the loan to someone who can.
So they take that note. They've got a note with the borrower. The borrower's agreed to pay. The note is in either default or technical default typically.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing then, we'll come back to what technical default means. And then they move that along. They're going to sell that note to somebody else who does not fall under, is it fair to say, the purview of the government from a banking regulation standpoint, who then doesn't have the constraints that a bank does in order to come up with all sorts of creative measures to resolve that loan. In some cases, that means taking the asset back. In some cases, that means restructuring the loan in a variety of ways to get that loan to perform.
Correct. The loan documents say what can and can't be done. So the buyer of that note can't just do anything. They just can't come in and say, hey, get out of here. I want the keys now. So there is a document or documents that kind of are the guidelines to what can and can't be done. And the new investor who takes over the bank's role has to abide by those documents.
Yep. Right.
That's where it gets a bit complicated. Obviously, you need lawyers who know what they're doing in order to successfully work out a deal.
Yeah. Tell me, default. Somebody doesn't pay. That's typically what it is to say that it's fair. They've defaulted on their agreement, the borrower that is, inside of a loan. What is a technical default?
Well, technical default just means that you didn't meet one of the covenants in your loan. So if your loan says that you're going to have a 65% occupancy and you have 60% occupancy, you end up in a technical default, which oftentimes a bank won't even notice or declare in technical default. That's less prevalent now. I'm going to say it's more prevalent that they'll notice it and actually notice that you're in default and default the loan, put the loan in default, send you a default letter and give you a whatever the prescribed amount of days is to cure your default. And then they have to take some sort of other action, whether it's acceleration, ask you to pay off the loan, there's all kinds of penalties involved, or they could end up selling the loan. We normally don't sell notes that just have technical or just payment defaults. And the reason that we don't is because the buyer would buy the loan and then the borrower has the ability to cure that default. And then you as the investor end up with a loan that has a very low coupon for the remainder of the loan. So most of what we do has to do with either maturity defaults or very severe monetary and technical defaults where they're not going to be, there's no ability for the borrower to bring the thing back out of default.
A maturity default being it was the first of the month, they owed full payoff on the first of the month, they didn't get it paid off. Now they're past when that balloon was due. That's an example of maturity default. And a monetary default would be they're severely delinquent, or maybe it's a combination of delinquent and the value of the asset has fallen to the spot where the original loan to value is way out of whack.
Correct. But we don't see a lot of that. The last part where the loan to value is a problem.
Okay. Think that'll change based on how you open this, to think that will trend down as comps continue to reduce?
No, I definitely think that there are some assets that secure loans that banks are, you know, that have marginal amounts of equity in them, but I don't think the banks have recognized the increase in decrease in value and the increase in loan to value. I don't think they're focused on that because I think that's a proposition that would create a very big problem for their entire portfolio.
Yeah. We talked about SVB last time we were on the show and the fact that they heavily got squeezed because they had to mark to market on their long-term bond portfolio. I'm wondering how bad a bank would be squeezed if their commercial borrowers had a mark to market on that loan portfolio, meaning the value of the real estate from the borrower's perspective.
Well, that's assuming that anyone was going to be realistic about the valuations. The comps would be all propped up. So no one's selling at a 10 cap. So
correct.
Not, even though the premise would be that, hey, these values have got to be lower because the cost of debt is higher. So we get people that are in default. And the reason why we target that, or my investors target that, is because the default rate is typically for a credit union is like 18%. For a bank, it's like 25%. And it could be negotiated if you want at the time that you sign the loan documents. But default, you know, normally it can't be more than around 25%. So if somebody ends up in a maturity default and ends up accruing at 25%, the investor who buys or company that buys the note has a lot of wiggle room to work with the borrower.
Got it.
Obviously, if you have a discount, that's even more. And that's traditionally how it was done. But right now, and again, this is kind of an update for the market, is the lenders are demanding par for their loan sales.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. You answered it before I asked. I was curious as to what you were seeing in that environment. And they're demanding par for their sales on their notes. Are they getting it?
They are getting it.
All right. So the bid ask is extraordinarily tight. What does that convey to you? Does it tell you that there's just that level of demand for the property to place? There's that much excess liquidity. There's still excess liquidity where you got to find a home and this may be a new home.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of money out there to buy these assets. They being the lenders, the banks, the credit unions, the debt funds, they don't expect to take a loss if they were to take back the property. But getting to that point is painful and long. And that's really where my business lies. My business lies in, I know if I stick this thing out, I know if I pay the taxes, I know if I pay the insurance, I know if I pay the lawyers, that at some point in the future, I will take back this property and sell it. And I believe that I'll sell it for a profit.
All right. So that's the bank's position. And they're better off in today's environment, probably just moving that note along, getting par, which is incredible. And then that buyer of that note, their position may be to take that property back sooner or later. The idea being that there's a delta. You know, when that borrower bought that property, they had to put down 20, 25, 30, 40%, and it has appreciated. And there is a delta there between what they actually owe and what that thing's actually worth. And if the lender can get their hands on it, in this case, the lender being an opportunistic fund, positioned themselves to go get discounted real estate, but by the back door, by virtue of getting the note and then foreclosing them out. You're seeing some of that taking place.
That's one strategy, and we'll
correct
that in a second. But the other caveat I have to give you is that we do not play with securitized debt. So everything you said was completely accurate in my world. Yep. But when it comes to conduit loans that were made at 80% and there's 10 years of interest only,
yep,
those properties may not have appreciated. They may not have more value. They may be somewhat close to underwater.
Yep.
So take that out of the equation. And yes, everything you said was 100% accurate. Now, some people will buy a property with the intention of taking back, buy a note with the intention of taking back a property.
Just one strategy.
Yes, one strategy. It's not a strategy that we lean towards because that requires more due diligence on the property itself. And the investor, typically their strategy is like a property buyer, and there's longer due diligence and appraisals and inspections and things like that that we prefer not to get into. The other strategy, which is more prevalent, is, as you said before, they're a lender. Let's just say you're a private investor, you make private mortgages, and you take over a note, which I can give you many examples of, and they come back to the investor and say, the borrower, and say, we can continue this and we can go to court for a year and you'll pay 25% over this year. Why don't I give you a year at 14%? Give us a point and pay interest only. You won't be in default. Go out and find yourself a refinance.
Yep. It becomes a paper trade for them to buy that note, work it out, what the bank cannot do. And if they're successful in doing so, a very attractive return on their dollars.
Right. So it's an above market return, and they have the willingness, the capability, and the staff to very quickly resolve a situation where the borrower doesn't cooperate, they don't pay their taxes, they don't pay their insurance, they don't make their interest payment, or maybe there's an interest reserve and they're doing something that they're not supposed to be doing. Very quickly, they'll file a foreclosure, they'll take legal action, they'll put a receiver in place, things that a bank is very hesitant to do because of the optics.
Let's talk about going forward. For the investor standpoint, where do you think that one should be placing their bets right now? Where do you see where do you see things heading in over the course of the next, let's call it the next year?
Well, there's still a crazy amount of money sitting on the sidelines. It's been there since before the Great Recession. I think a lot of that money decided they were going to be in distress funds, they were going to be in equity funds, they were going to be in distressed debt funds, then they were in debt funds, and then they lowered their yield. And I just think a lot of that money didn't get deployed. So I think a lot of that money is still out there, and a lot of the big investors are gearing up with distress funds, and I know people who are doing it, but I think they're not looking at it the way that it's happening now. I think they're waiting for it to happen the way it used to happen. And that's fine. That makes sense. If you can get a 30%, 40% discount on the note, then it's a crazier investment. It's a beautiful investment, but that's not happening now. So they think they're still on the sidelines. And I don't know that it is or isn't going to happen. I mean, there's always a chance that the federal government, the Fed, and BlackRock or Goldman Sachs create some sort of system where they scoop up all the distressed loans to save the banks, the way they did it with residential loans in the Great Recession. So where that's going is, I think at some point, those people will get more aggressive and they'll offer more, demand less of a discount, and look at the yield they can make the way the market is now, and give the banks what they want until things get worse. And listen, every quarter we hear from lenders that we work with that next quarter we're going to get more serious, or we have a bunch of loans that we've identified and we're working with those people now, but we don't think they're going to make it. So, you know, we've got some notes coming. So I do believe it's coming. I do believe it's going to be more than just a one here, one there, and a trickle. I think that trickle becomes a stronger flow at some point, deal flow. But again, it really depends on where the equilibrium in the market lies, because there are other ways of doing this. There's auctions. You can go to a traditional brokerage, national brokerage company, and you can do it yourself. And there are often lenders who do. They've got some insiders, they've got some board members, they've got some clients who buy notes, and they can sell them to them. But again, there's a lot of inefficiency in that. They don't know if I sell a note to you, I have no idea what somebody else will pay for it. So I don't know if I got the most for it. That also, these things take time. Time is money. Mm-hmm. So if you're a workout person at a bank, chances are you haven't done it before, because most of those people gone, and now they're bringing in younger people who haven't been through this process before and making them into workout people. And an auction is a process you have to manage. I don't know if you've been through an auction, but I have, and there's a lot of due diligence that goes into a vault. There are parties that get done in advance, and then there's a whole bunch of marketing, and then there's the auction itself. So if you've got 30, 40, 50, 100 properties, I don't know that you saved yourself anything by creating an auction. I understand you can't sell 100 notes yourself, or maybe you can't because they're individual notes and everybody likes something different. Or you can give it to one of the big property brokerage companies, a JLL, a Cushman, a Newmark, whatever you want. But they're also going through a similar process like the auction company, but they're also marketing. This is like taking a billboard out and saying, we're selling notes. So as a lender, if you're a big bank and you're still operating as a bank, and I know they're not making a lot of loans, but they're still offering loans.
Yep.
It's kind of confusing that you're selling notes in such a public way and you're still asking people to rely on you to make a credit decision that isn't influenced by the fact that you're scared of dealing with these loans.
It's a mixed message to the marketplace.
Right. And listen, it's a great system for selling a property because your property could sell for any number. If somebody has an interest in it, it can go for more than you're asking for it. You can get better terms from different buyers and things like that. With a note, par is really about as high as it goes. We've had private lenders where we've sold notes for par plus some of the default interest. But that's just because there's a really large delta between the note and the value of the property. Yeah. And there's still a lot of money to be made, and it has been made. So what we've created is a very discreet way of very quickly, when I say very quickly, what I mean is we typically handle a deal with 1 week of due diligence and closing a week later.
Incredible.
So imagine if you're a lender selling a note for par, closing in 2 weeks, and no one knows that you closed, that you sold a note. That to me is the ideal way of selling a note.
What's your position on this statement? I think shy of a miracle in the market, which would mean interest rates significantly falling, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better.
I think it's spot on, but I don't know. Depends on what you mean by much worse.
Properties coming back to a bank, default note, technical defaults, actual defaults. That's what I mean by a lot worse. That you're going to find people coming off their 3, 4, and 5% interest rates, and you're into 6, 7, 8s, maybe higher. They continue to move in an upward fashion and they're not going to work. You're going to find properties going to market, sold at a discount, meaning lower than what they paid for it when they bought it, and or opportunities where they're coming back for a refinance and it's a cash-in refinance.
I think all the above for sure, but one thing I've learned from a couple of downturns is that the level of pain is different in every zip code. And unfortunately, the zip code that I sit in, fortunately for me, the zip code that I sit in will see almost no, if any, pain at all. The zip code that you sit in may see a lot of pain.
We don't have the number of bodies who've shown up post-COVID, right?
Yeah. You know, we have a ton of immigration. We've got a ton of flight capital. We've got companies moving here from other places. We've got employment growth. It's unaffordable, but I think the people that live here will be replaced by richer people who can afford to live here. And these people move north within the state.
Here's the reaction we're taking, and give me some input here. This is for the benefit of the passive listeners listening. From our standpoint, we're trying to buy deals in solid zip codes, as you said, marketplaces, with underlying tenants who absolutely make sense. The idea being that they're stable, longer-term tenants. And we're giving ourselves some optionality when we go in to do a finance package. It typically looks like a 5-year. So that we've got some, and we're very heavily focused on what's that prepay look like? The idea being, can we get ourselves out in 12 to 24 to 36 months, whatever, to have the optionality of doing so. But I want to make sure we get long enough to find our way through any sort of cycle that really could come along.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. I think you have to look at a number of different things. And as the crazy part about it is, as things get dicier, people start to focus more on things that they didn't focus on before, which I think are counterproductive.
Give me an example.
2 years ago or 3 years ago, prior to COVID, they would have said, you know, I've got so much equity in my property, I'm never giving it up. Recourse doesn't matter to me. Now everybody wants non-recourse. And what does that say to me as the person who's going to lend you 70% of what your property is worth or 65% of what your property is worth? All of a sudden, now you change your mind on recourse. I'm not saying, I'm not being judgmental about it. I'm just saying it's weird that all of a sudden they're saying, you know, you have nothing to worry about, but I'm worried. And now people come to me and say, you know, I can't take a 5 3/4, 10-year fixed rate with yield maintenance. Now, mind you, the bank is charging 7.
Right.
So the delta between my coupon and their coupon is crazy. And they say to me, well, rates are going to go down. So I say, okay, when are rates going down? They say they're going to go down soon. Because the government can't continue to pay what it's charging itself, you know, these rates on the government debt. So I say, okay, take a floating rate. And they say, what, are you crazy? I said, well, you just said rates are going down. If you think rates have flattened and they're going down, why is that a problem? I can get you a floating rate with no cap. And they say, forget it. You're being a clown. That's crazy.
Right.
Crazy though. So I'm not the one that's talking crazy. How could you say that you think rates are not going any higher and they're going down? Let's just say say it's event driven and the new president's going to come in and pressure the Fed to lower rates, we'll have enough term, inflation will come down. You're not willing to take that bet and lock in 5.75 or 6%.
It's an interesting time.
It does nothing make sense. It's, again, like we talked about earlier, yep. I think people have too much faith in institutions that may or may not be there for them.
We're backed by a government who can, you know, to go to your statement, the government can't afford to pay the debt with interest rates this high. A government hasn't been able to afford to pay their debt in years and years and years and years, and they just print more money.
Yeah, I don't think they were ever interested in paying the debt, even at the lower rate.
The government doesn't work on an economic level like you and I have to work on an economic level, where we have budgets, where we have demands, where we have finite resources. They just print more.
Correct.
It's a very different. And ultimately, that printing is largely how we got to this period on the post-pandemic. We got into a hyperinflationary, close to a hyperinflationary, a high inflationary environment, and find ourselves with interest rates going hard the opposite direction.
Right. So until a money tree pops up in your yard, you have to live within a very easy to detail budget. Knowing that you have a certain budget, knowing that you're unhappy about the yield you're going to get on your property with an interest rate that's pushing 7, you know, coming out of an interest rate that was 3.5, there's not a lot of options. 3.5 is not here now. The question really becomes, we're out of note sale work back in mortgage brokerage world. If you have a short period of time, let's say 1 or 2 years, 18 months, 24 months left on your loan, I would focus less on the coupon, which I know sounds, you know, like I'm saying something that's derogatory. I would focus not only on the coupon, but on what could possibly be happening when you're looking for a loan in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bad comp, higher rates, more conservative lenders, and potentially far fewer lenders. Less competition. So you could be, you know, forced into a sale. And I don't know that you can get the same amount of money for your property 2 years from now, 18 months from now.
You know, the people who do it best, this business best, are the people at the end of the day who survive. Because if you don't survive, you never get an opportunity to thrive. And so for some people, when you're staring down exactly what you just said to go, what's my future look like in 12 months when I'm up on a refinance? Mm-hmm. It could be a lot worse than what it is today. Get yourself over the hump and give yourself some options on the backside of that hump.
Right. And I'm giving you free advice. I've been doing this for 30 years and I've done nothing else. I wasn't a carpenter. I didn't make bologna for a living. All I have done is loans. And I'm telling you, now is the time. And I'm telling you, as a lender, if you're a lender, the present value of the dollars I'm going to give you for that note are better than the outcome you're going to get if you keep the note.
One thing that you and I talked about before we came on air, and I think it's worth repeating now, whether the interest rate's 3 or 13, you get paid the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't change in your world.
I have no financial incentive to get you to take one or the other.
Yeah.
So the thing that I can tell you, if you're listening to this podcast and you're saying, okay, these guys are talking about all kinds of things that are above my pay grade or spot on, why do I care about notes? It's not necessarily, I know our perspective is, hey, maybe one of the listeners will become a note buyer. That's not that easy to do because, again, you have to have cash, not just to buy the loan in 2 weeks or maybe an auction, spend the money on 1,600 auctions to buy one note. You got to do all the due diligence, you got to do the legal, all that fun stuff. There's a lot of cost to it. And then if you do buy the note, you have to be prepared to service the note. You have to pay the taxes if they don't pay the taxes. You have to pay the lawyers to keep them working on going to court. You have to pay the insurance if they stop paying insurance. And then there may be no cash flow. So it's an expensive proposition. But the other purpose of this conversation, I didn't think about it before, is that you may end up having a note sold on you. If you're one of the people that is frozen and living in the past and waiting for rates to come down and so sure that by the time your maturity comes around 2 years from now, that rates are going to be 3.5%, but you end up at 8 and your note gets sold, the one thing I will tell you is pick up the phone. When they call you and say, I am your new lender, I bought your note, pick up the phone. It doesn't matter what they say. It's just a conversation. Mm. They're not going to say anything that's going to keep you from hiring a lawyer, going to court, whatever it is you're going to do, you're still going to do. But oftentimes what they do is the borrower goes to their attorney and the attorney tells them, don't do anything. We're just going to respond to the lawsuit and that's it. And that's a big mistake.
People oftentimes, in my experience, discount that human-to-human connection. The ability for there's somebody else on the other end, they have a need. Everybody's got a boss. They have goals and objectives, things they have to do and requirements on them. And oftentimes they're not trying to be the bad person, but they do have to get certain things done. And so sometimes it just makes sense to have a conversation and work and communicate to navigate whatever that situation happens to be.
Right. No, listen, I understand that your lawyer is going to tell you, look, I don't want to give them any information they can use against you. But the reality is you don't know what kind of lender you have now. Is it the guy, like you said before, that wants to take the property from you? Is it someone who's reasonable and just wants to make a yield?
Right.
Maybe I can actually lower my payment and work with someone that has the flexibility to let me execute a plan. Either way, your loan documents give you remedies and the court will give you time. So if you want to sell your property and you can do it quickly, that's not something that a new lender is going to get in the way of.
Yeah.
In most cases, if you obviously have bad documents and you've given away your rights, that's different. But so that's my recommendation would be communicate.
Speaking of that, Michael, this has been a great conversation. For people who want to communicate, they want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you. What should they do? Where should they go?
Our website is artcrenotes.com. So it's Asset Resolution Trust. And you can email me at mballon@artcrenotes.com. You can go on the website and communicate with me there. You can go on my LinkedIn profile and message me, or you can call me. I think we mentioned this last time. I'm one of the few people on LinkedIn that has my contact information in my profile.
Right. Yes. All the links below to everything you just mentioned, Michael, everything's below in the show notes for you guys. So you can get all the information there, connect with Michael on LinkedIn, get his phone number, pick up the phone and call him. He'll actually answer.
I'm going to give a shout out, which is the purpose of my shout out is not just to give a shout out, but to redirect all this traffic. If you're a note buyer that has bought notes before and has the capital to do it, please reach out to me. If you're a lender that is looking to either find out what they can get for a note, talk about the market, create a relationship in case there is a loan that goes bad, because lenders by and large don't make bad loans. Loans eventually end up in, the borrowers end up in distress.
Right.
So I'd love to add more lenders who are curious about our process. But if you are a distressed borrower, that's not my business. Michael Cohn, Brighton, I forget the full name. You can find him on LinkedIn. He will help a person navigate the water of a situation with their lender or their servicer particularly.
Perfect. That's good information. So we can point somebody in the right direction.
They can call me about a problem they're having with a lender. I won't be able to help them.
Yep. No, that's good information. Not in your wheelhouse. Perfect. Michael, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. Always a wonderful conversation. I look forward to having you back on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's always good talking with you.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.